And Kathy is the founder and director of ADVERB, a program of the Westbrook College of Health Professions and the University of New England, at the University of New England. Kathy has presented nationally and internationally on ADVERB's use of theater for health and wellness education since the mid-90s, including TEDx Dorigo. Her work has won numerous honors and for community and health activism. And she'll be discussing eating disorders and youth, raising awareness, and raising peer intervention rates. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And I'll try to keep us quick because I wanted to bring along some colleagues as well because they can speak to parts of our research study better than I. Peter and Allison will be joining us momentarily. We have nothing to disclose other than that I am the playwright, and that's why there's a research team that's not just me. We hope to give you a sense of what the study was and where it's going. And what I am pleased with this lineup here, and thank you for the committee for bringing this stuff together, is that some of the problems in having identified an obesity epidemic is that we are finding really terrific ways to make it worse for people who suffer with mental illnesses. Really, really terrific ways. So let's just focus on BMI for a little while, right? So I created a play called The Thin Line, and it's been touring into schools and colleges for many years now. And what was sort of behind this play was the content was related to filling a void because our people do not understand who are supposed to be teaching our youth what eating disorders are, and there's really bad information out there. And so The Thin Line, there's one of our actors there, was to address that void of real information, was also to do no harm, and to offer a what can we do about it, because it's really, really lame and not enough to just raise the problem and give you information. Great starting point. What do we do about it? And I think the long-term impact has been pretty amazing in lots of ways, and I could tell you lots and lots of stories that will move you. And what's really exciting to me is that we actually have some data now that goes with those moving anecdotes, which Allison and Peter will talk a little more about in a minute. The content of the piece deals with a character who is struggling, her mother and her friend, and we've personified sort of in that narrative therapy kind of way, I didn't know what that meant until recently, the eating disorder itself. And we've really worked very hard with an interprofessional team, not only in our research team, but in the content development, because we wanted it to meet learning standards, but also not trigger and shame or blame. You know, last thing we really need to do is throw mothers under the bus, for example. And so the character of the mother has had a lot of consideration in that regard as to how to raise this issue without making it be a mother blame game. Let's see, what else can I tell you? So in our study, our interventions were really wanting to make sure that people could identify the signs and the impact, and we wanted them to be able to offer help and support to someone in the community. And more importantly, though, of anything, it's a play. We really want people to know where to go and who to talk to. And so part of the play is a process of bringing in local resources for support, for crisis intervention, and for figuring out what do you do. And what's nice about this kind of a setup is that the information goes in and then it can be acted upon when it's needed. So sometimes we understand that after the show, there'll be five people who sort of, you know, find those resources right away. And sometimes we hear 4 months later, somebody recognized behaviors in their sister and made an intervention themselves. So that's a good thing. And these are an example of what it looks like to have a conversation after the show. What else can I tell you? So this post-show is really kind of heartbreaking, I guess. Some of the questions that come out of the audiences continue to underscore why this is such an important conversation to have with qualified people. This the gasp that came in the room when someone asked, is it contagious? There's a girl who cuts herself. Why does she cut herself? How do you raise this issue in a way that doesn't trigger this? Do we talk about the effect and the endorphin rush and the, you know, that's totally connected to the drug use in there? No, we frame it in a way so the mother finds this, discovers it, is horrified and is trying to figure out how to help. So there are ways to figure out how to keep the information in without making it be something that's triggering. That last one was from my dean. He was making a joke, but he wasn't, about undoing the damage he had done as a parent. So at this point, Allison, if you'll come on up and take it from here, I'll step aside, and Peter will take our focus group findings.
Okay, thanks. I think we kind of skipped by the research questions a little earlier. The slide was out of place, but basically we wanted to measure the impact of the thin line on the teens who saw it in terms of their perceptions of eating disorders and their feelings of behavioral control and what they might intend to do if they had a friend who had some symptoms and what they might actually do. So we administered a self-survey before they saw the program and then afterwards, and followed them. Actually, the program was in ninth grade, so we went back and did the same survey with the 10th graders and with the 11th graders. So the total amount of participants in the ninth grade before the intervention was 1,428, and then smaller numbers at the follow-up surveys. Compared to the pretest, only about two-thirds as many students actually completed the post. And those were not necessarily the exact same individuals. We didn't keep any data about their identities, so we didn't actually match them. But we did ask them if they had seen the show. And about 15% of the ones in the follow-up surveys hadn't actually seen it. We kept them in the analysis. It's a conservative analysis that way. So we can be pretty confident when we have findings. All right, as far as the perceptions of eating disorders, these are early findings. The 9th and 10th graders, only about 59% or 54% of the students actually knew someone that they thought might have an eating disorder. But when you look at the 11th graders, that number jumped up to 72%. So that was quite an increase in the awareness of someone around them who might have an issue. The female students were much more likely to know someone with disordered eating, on average 69% compared to 46% among the male and the transgender students. And the increase in the 11th grade, it held true for both the male and the female students. When they were asked to describe some characteristics of the person that they knew, about two-thirds of them described, they didn't use the word anorexic, but they felt that the person was trying to be thin, and about a quarter that they would be classified as bulimic. 70% said that the person they knew thinks they're fatter than they really are. That was pretty consistent over time, so the thin line didn't really change their idea of why someone might have disordered eating. But more interesting, I think, is that, oh, this doesn't show. Is there a way to scroll down? Well, I'll just have to describe it. That there was a question about whether their friend over-exercised, and that went from 7% in ninth grade, and it went down to 43% in 11th grade, but that was a highly significant, actually, drop in that description. I think if anyone wants to talk about that, Peter might have some interpretation on that. Just after seeing the thin line, many more students, it went from 70% to 80%, felt somewhat or very able to take action on behalf of another person who might have disordered eating. This tapered off a little over time. It was still, 2 years later, still 75% felt they could able to take action for another person. More students felt able to take action on their own behalf. That was just a slight increase after the thin line. But after seeing the program, more students went from 82% to 88%, felt either somewhat or definitely that they have the tools and the resources that they need to take some action concerning an eating disorder. So this remained very high, actually 91% a year later, and then tapered off to 85%, but this was a highly significant finding. Overall, about three-quarters of students felt that seeing the thin line had increased their sense that they could take action on behalf of someone else or themselves. And over time, that tapered off a little to about two-thirds. We also asked students how they would handle a hypothetical situation if a close friend or family member had disordered eating. And the percent that would ignore or minimize the behavior, it dropped off, but only at the 11th grade point. About 73% said that they would actually talk directly to the person, and that remained pretty constant. Same with speaking with their own parents, that stayed relatively constant, 63%. And quite a few felt that they would talk with a health professional or a trusted adult at school as well. This was a highly significant increase right after seeing the thin line. Went from 41% to 52 or 3. And then when we asked them what they actually had done among the students, there were 1,369 surveys where they said that they had taken action concerning a person with disordered eating. And on average, about 40% of them, of the ones who knew someone, had actually taken action. When we asked them what they did, the most common thing was that they had spoken directly to the person, about 57%, and about 15% spoke with their own parent or family member. Fewer than 10% actually spoke with a health professional. And these were not significantly affected by the program. But it is kind of interesting to note that the percent who did speak with a health professional or another adult is a lot lower than what they said that they thought they would do when in a hypothetical situation. So
I was running low on time. The focus group findings very much echoed the data that Allison was just talking about. What we discovered is that I think a lot of students who go into this had sort of over reduced the problem of eating disorders. They thought it was a very small sort of narrow thing. And what this intervention helped them with was to understand that, no, this is actually bigger. It's more complicated. It has lots of other side effects. The over-exercising thing that Allison mentioned, in the pre-test, 33% of students thought that the person that they knew who they felt had an eating disorder over-exercised. Only 33% did. But after talking about it and recontextualizing that in the broader scheme of this, now you're looking at, what was it, like, went up to 47% and 46% the year after that. So more of the students are able to say, oh, an eating disorder isn't just about the food that this person is putting in their mouth. An eating disorder can be about their exercise and all that. And so the other thing that it helped with is creating a sense of being able to talk to other people. Some of this is that now that I know the adults at school have had this conversation with us as well, I know that this isn't something that's invisible to the adults, and now we can talk about it. And it also helped with giving them a sense of other things that they could do in addition to just talking with the person, which they said that they did as well. And it also helped with helping schools understand what they could do above and beyond the intervention. The intervention is a brief show, and the panel that Kathy showed, they're required to bring in outside experts to be there. It's not just the school as well. So they get a sense of what else could be done. And that is the end of it. And the rest of there are more of us that couldn't make it, but that is the rest of our project. Yeah?